The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
I'm delighted to be joined now by Spider Stacey in studio. He, of course, of the Pogues fame. And they are playing in the Three Arena 17th of December, actually, and marking 40 years since the debut album. Spider, it's great to see you. Thanks a million for coming into us.
It's a pleasure. Thanks, Kieran. I should say, first of all, Kieran, it's not actually as a Pogues reunion as such, though there will be Pogues there.
Okay.
It's more about a celebration of 40 years of Red Roses for me. But that's only a minor point.
What is it about Red Roses you want to celebrate 40 years on then?
Well, because it's a great record and it's our first record. It wasn't my idea. It was Tom Cole from Fontaines DC and a guy called Campbell Baum from a company called Broadside Hacks, a sort of collective called Broadside Hacks, who were doing a weekend of Irish music at a place called the Moth Club in Hackney in London. And I think it was Tom realized that it was 40 years since Red Roses was released, so he had the idea of doing something on the Friday, based around that. And then they asked me if I'd like to curate it, and I thought that sounded like a good idea. I thought it was quite good that we were actually, there was going to be something like this that was actually going to have one of the Pogues involved rather than not involved. So we announced this thing at the Moth Club, which sold out immediately. So we then moved it across the road to Hackney Empire, which is a beautiful old music hall. It was such a great night. It was a really, really, it was very cathartic. I think although it wasn't sort of as ostensibly a tribute to Shane, inevitably, of course, implicitly, and what very much so was a tribute to Shane and to the record and to, and it came together so well, and everybody who took part in it really, really just really sort of pulled all the stops out. It was a really great night, grown men crying in the aisles. But that's actually, what was actually happening, in a really, really good age range and everything. And so it was then inevitable, obviously, once we'd done this in London, that it had to be done in Dublin, had to be done in Ireland.
So that's when it's happening.
It just seemed that, as it sold out so quickly, the Hackney Empire sold out very, very quickly as well. We thought, let's try for a place with a good size, like the Three Arena, which possibly ambitious, but we'll see what happens.
No, I don't think so.
I think it'll be all right.
Yeah, I think it'll be all right.
I'm just being coy.
The way sometimes you speak to writers and they're a little embarrassed by their early writing to a degree. You know what I mean? That it evolves so much over time. I don't get any sense of that when you look back at an album like this.
Oh, no, not at all. Oh, God, no. Red Roses was where we were at the time, but it's a great record.
Yeah.
There's nothing about... I think my favourite Pogues albums are the first three.
Okay.
And between those first... Out of those first three, I think I'd probably actually say in some ways Red Roses is my favourite, but then, of course, it does kind of depend what sort of mood I'm in.
Yeah.
I could say the same about Rum, Sodomy and The Lash and obviously Fall From Grace. But I thought, at the time I was so proud when I first held the copy of it in my hand, first saw it for sale in a record shop.
Yeah.
The first time I played it to people, the reactions was just like, I was expecting people to go, what's this?
Yeah.
And they were like, this is great, I was like, okay, I mean, I knew it was, but, sometimes you need to hear other people say it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I guess it's validation, I guess, as well, isn't
it? Well, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. But, because there was always this thing that, I knew, and I'm sure I know the other people in the band knew, was that we had this colossal talent that was just like, who was just like sort of basically unfolding like this glorious red rose.
Yeah.
You know? It was a great thing to be in the Pogues in those early days, and just knowing, I was just saying this earlier, you know, I think if you're in a band, if you really sort of believe in what you're doing, you have to kind of have this feeling that at some level that you're the best band in the world. Possibly maybe you're one of the best bands in the world, but there should be a part of you that's actually, well, no, we're not one of the best bands in the world. We're the best band in the world. And if you don't have that, I don't know. I mean, like, maybe some people are, well, I can never say that about myself, and maybe they actually are. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I really did feel that, and I felt that even more as time went on, and, you know, and Shane sort of, like, if developed is the right word as a songwriter, I mean, I don't know, it just refined his, yeah, I suppose, if you like.
Yeah.
Just honed his songwriting.
Yeah. Was there
an even finer point?
Was there a point in time then that you would say, again, we'll really butcher the metaphor, that he was kind of in full bloom? You would say that was the rose in full bloom, that period or that time?
I think that whole period up until really sort of like I guess, towards the late 80s.
Okay.
After Fall from Grace. I think, I can't speak for, I mean, I think, you know, it must have become sort of harder to sort of like, to remain sort of writing what he was writing with the way that his life had changed. But yet at the same time, he was still coming out with great songs. I mean, one of the finest songs that he ever wrote was you know, long after he had left the Pogues, the Dunes, which Ronnie Drew sang. And but there was definitely a sort of a point around. I think my favorite Pogue song, my favorite song that Shane wrote, is The Broad Majestic Shaman.
Okay.
And I think then, you know, and I don't really like ranking them, but I think that is the sort of the apogee.
Yeah.
I think everything that he was about, or that his songwriting was about, I think is somehow contained in that song. I think it's such a perfect expression of, not of, well, of loss, I suppose, but of this yearning of you know, what it's like to be an emigre, to be sort of like. And but it's as with all of Shane's songs, and I've sort of started talking about it, but of course, as I'm saying this, and I think there's so many other things in there that, as well, so there's the obvious kind of like subject matter of the song, which is kind of pretty straightforward, but yet, you know, there's layers of meaning there, and which is what you get with great writers. They kind of they defy sort of glib explanations or analyses or whatever you want to call it.
Because grown up after, I'd say those albums would have kind of all been out in the ether, and to a degree, maybe like younger generations, say me and below, you take it for granted, some of that talent. And then when he passed away, it was actually reading something that he had done in school, something he'd written in school. And it was just so obvious from so young what kind of mercurial talent he had. And it's like almost when you kind of see, do you know when you watch sport on TV versus in real life, and you realize how incredibly talented these people are. Yeah. They're like a different species.
Yes,
you kind of think that person could not be related to me as a species. That was the realization I almost had when I read that, when I said, if Shane McGowan wrote that as a student, as a kid, like, we're not related as a species. Kind of way.
Yeah, it's a superior.
Yeah, I mean, because you were all like superbly talented, but was there kind of that moment for you early on when you met him, or when you started kind of collaborating, you think, oof, this guy is like off the charts.
I mean, he was an extremely charismatic person. That was, you know, I was about to say that was clear right from the off, but that kind of comes with the territory of being charismatic.
Yeah.
If it wasn't apparent, then maybe you're not that charismatic. Yeah. But I mean, you know, the Nips, his previous band, were a great band, and you could see that he had a knack for writing songs. You know, he was a good songwriter. But when I think the first Pogues song the first song he wrote for the Pogues that I heard. When he showed me the lyrics, so I guess I saw him, was Streams of Whiskey. Jem Finer was actually talking about this the other day. It's the same thing. And we were both, it was at different times, but we were both just completely blown away by the nature of what he had written, just the sort of form of it. And also what this kind of implied. You know, if he's done this now, this is just like, you know, because I think what happened with the Nips, they'd kind of reached a point where they really weren't going to get any further. And Shane was possibly like, maybe a bit bored with like, he wanted to do something musically a little bit different.
Yeah.
The same kind of feel, but just a different sort of sound. And kind of alighted upon, I mean, like Irish music was an obvious thing. And there's a couple of other things he thought of. And then, it just gave him suddenly, in terms of songwriting, it just gave him much more scope because he just sort of fell so, obviously because he's so familiar with it, but into that whole sort of that narrative that you find, you know, the idea of the narrative in the song and the story. So the songs as stories, which is not so much really the case if you're like in a rock and roll band generally, you know.
Yeah.
It's less sort of about girls and cars and it's about going for it. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's again, you know, it was the natural outlet for his talent. I think is actually probably the best way of putting it.
Okay.
Because it enabled him to sort of write the way that he wanted to write. I think he would have been a great novelist. He was a great poet. And he would have written great poetry as distinct from song lyrics, which are the same thing, but constructed for a different format, if you like. If that makes sense.
So, when he passes away and you end up with all these retrospectives, I guess the canon and all of that finds itself back in the kind of the ether. But it was anyway, to a degree, or it would be, because you've got like Lancome and the Mary Wallopers and all of that around now. Yeah. And they're always citing the Pogues as kind of inspiration, or as, you know, the genesis of this kind of musical stream that they find themselves in. How does that feel?
That's just extremely flattering. And you know, if we in any way had anything to do with them ending up doing what they're doing now, then, you know, I know he'd be very, very happy with that. I know he met the Wallopers a few times. I don't think he ever met anyone from Lancome. But certainly the Wallopers he did.
Yeah.
And I think he really, really liked them. And I think he liked them as people as well, you know. Yeah. Hard not to.
But you must take pride from it as well.
Oh God, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, really. It's kind of it's sort of given me a new lease of life almost, you know.
Yeah.
They're just so, so good. Such great bands. I mean, and they're far from the only ones.
Who were your version of the Pogues for them? Does that make sense? Wait. You know, when you were being interviewed.
Oh well, I mean,
kind of when this album came out, like the way they cite the Pogues now. Who were you citing at the time?
It was really people. The obvious reference point would be the Dubliners.
I mean,
we weren't. It's a slightly different thing because, I mean, other than Shane, Terry Woods didn't grow up listening to the Dubliners.
Yeah.
Because, but what I'm saying is, and Shane was obviously, you know, kind of did grow up listening to the Dubliners. I'd heard the Dubliners. I think everybody had sort of heard the Dubliners here or there because they were a big band and a very popular band. And, you know, if you went into Irish pubs in London, there was a very good chance that you might hear the Dubliners.
Yeah,
I mean, we their sort of approach was very much what we didn't model ourselves on it, but it was very much a sort of thing that we had in mind.
When you hit that sweet spot, when you kind of, you know, find yourself mining the seam, like with the first three albums, Does it become a thing you're kind of chasing the dragon then for a period of time afterwards? You're kind of trying to recreate magic.
What you mean with the
yeah?
Albums?
In terms of just even from a musical point of view, you know, and from a creative process point of view, like, is there a period wherein you're kind of trying to replicate the magic of the past before you realize that it was of its time? Because you kind of, the very first thing you actually said was so much of its time. It's exactly where we were in the world at that time,
yeah,
and
yeah.
it reflects that time, and that's why you're so proud of it. But you know. And you probably today wouldn't try and recreate that in the studio if you were in there. But is there a period of time where you're trying to recreate it?
I would I'd sort of try and recreate that kind of feel and that kind of energy, absolutely. The attitude.
Yeah, okay.
I think, you know, when we were doing the reunions, obviously we would be asked an awful lot, you know, are you going to write any new material?
Yeah.
And I would always like say, well, you know, I don't really think there's any point. You know, we're all different people now, and it's a different time. That was all sort of music that reflected what was happening then, and plus there's always the thing, you know, like, people never want to hear the new stuff; they want to hear the any band, you know. But
it's like the Alan Partridge. What's your favorite Beatles album? The Greatest Hits.
I think, you know. There was a certain amount of creative burnout that went on.
Yeah.
We worked so, you know, we toured so hard, and harder than we needed to, really. I know that, you know, certainly for Shane, that didn't really do him any favours at all on all sorts of levels, but particularly when it came to actually sort of writing I just think... Well, you know, it took a lot out of him.
Yeah.
And we were, like, you know, constantly on the road. I think Shane wrote better. I can't really say this, but I get the impression he worked much better when the pressure was off.
Yeah.
Rather than when the pressure was off. That's another thing, of course, as well. That thing like, oh, you've got to write such and such an amount of songs because we've got an album which is, you know, expected to be really... Yeah. Whenever, you know what I mean? And it's like, that's not really the way it works, you know?
Yeah, music has to fit the machine.
Yeah.
Is that idea, isn't it? All songs are a certain length because of how they fit it on the record.
We want a heartbreaking work, a staggering genius by next Wednesday.
Yeah, exactly. By 2 o'clock next Wednesday.
2 o'clock next Wednesday,
by the way.
Yeah.
Listen, Spider, it's been a real pleasure. I could chat about this all day.
So could I.
I'll get in trouble if we do. So the Three Arena, 17th of December, is when this kind of celebration night will be held. Spider, of course, will be there. There'll be plenty of other ensemble casts, is the way we might describe
it. You all have to come.
Yes. Look, he's desperately trying to flog tickets, but as he said at the start, he doesn't desperately need to. They'll sell. But if you want to go, try and get your hands on them as quick as you can. They're on sale now. Spider, thank you so much.
It's a real pleasure. Thanks, Kieran.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.